Thanks for joining me. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Today on The Record with NCMP Leon Pereira. Leon Pereira of the Workers' Party contested as a member of the Workers' Party's East Coast GRC team in last year's general election. They lost, but being part of a team that was among the top three losers, he has since taken on the role of non-constituency member of parliament. He and his party have since come under fire in parliament over their stance on the NCMP scheme. He goes on the record with me about this, the political viability of the Workers' Party, and their plans to convince the electorate of the merits of more balanced politics. But first, he became aware of politics at the young age of 11 when Mr. J.B. Jeyaratnam of the WP won the 1981 by-election. While this inspired him, so did his parents, primary school teachers who exposed him from a very young age to books on economics and philosophy. He tells us more.
My parents were individuals who were very engaged with the wider society. They had opinions about politics, about the economy, about the socio-political landscape, and those were things that we discussed at the dinner table and we discussed at home. And they always encouraged me to form my own opinions and above all to be interested in the wider society, not just to hunker down and focus on one's own career, one's own interests, one's own path in the world, but also to cultivate some views about the wider society. They were basically people who encouraged their children to have aspirations for the society rather than just aspirations for yourself. So I think I owe them a great deal.
What is your most vivid memory of your first election experience as a political candidate?
Well, my first experience of the election campaign itself was at the nomination centre, and I have very vivid memories of that because it was the first experience and it was something very unusual and new to me. So I remember going to the nomination centre with my colleagues and some of our members and volunteers. We filled up the paperwork and we spent quite a lot of time just sitting there waiting for the 1 hour to be up. And we shook hands with our opponents, and I think that's a good thing because I strongly believe that your adversary is not necessarily your enemy. So that was also a memorable experience. I don't view any of our political adversaries as enemies. But something quite funny about that experience was just sitting there and waiting for the time to pass. So I remember chit-chatting with my teammates from the Workers' Party team in East Coast GRC, and we were talking about all kinds of things, just waiting for that hour to pass, science fiction movies and so on and so forth.
Things completely unrelated to politics.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, you and your party colleagues have talked a great deal about the importance of balanced politics, understandably so, but clearly based on the way Singaporeans voted in the last election, the electorate doesn't agree with you. What do you have to say to that?
Well, I certainly think that we need to improve, we need to work harder and do better, and that's what I intend to do, and that's what my colleagues intend to do. There's always room for improvement, and I'm very passionate about that. I'm a great opponent of complacency, I'm a great opponent of self-congratulation, and I think there's a fair bit of both of those things in our political discourse, and I don't think that's a healthy trend. So we need to improve and do better. We need to work hard, and that's what we're going to do. But having said that, I look at the election result, and I would also caution that we should not assume too much. I think if we asked all of the voters, including many of the voters who voted for the People's Action Party, would you want there to be no elected opposition MPs? I'm not so sure that they would say, yes, we want zero opposition MPs. So I think we should also interpret that result in a particular way. You know, we should not assume too much from that. But having said that, I think overall my emphasis on that question would be that we need to improve.
But while people may say, no, it is not the case that we want no elected opposition MPs in Parliament, the majority in the constituency you contested in did not vote for you, and the WP as a whole lost ground. So really, does that sentiment count for anything if they don't feel strongly enough about it or you to exercise their right to vote in your favour at the ballot boxes?
Well, that's a fair point. And we certainly respect the choice of the voters, I think, as what you said. I mean, people have voted in a particular way. So, you know, we respect that. And we need to work hard to convince voters of the value of our arguments and the value of supporting us.
What were the biggest mistakes you think you and your party made that, if you hadn't, would have managed to convince voters of this?
Well, one of the things on reflection that I think that we could have done better is to explain more effectively the positive ideas that we had for policy that were revealed in our manifesto. And that is something that we could have been more effective at doing. And that's something I hope that we can do better on going forward. We had a manifesto with many positive and proactive ideas for Singapore, to make Singapore better. some people reacted to that by saying, well, this is quite technical, this is quite complex, there are so many different ideas in here, we need more time to digest that and process
that. It was over
that.
100 proposals, wasn't it? 130, to be exact?
Yes, over 130 specific policy recommendations. So I think that's something that, in hindsight, I would say that maybe we should have done better in terms of communicating the richness and the value of these ideas to convince people that these are good ideas, these are positive ideas, these are not just ideas that are opposing for the sake of opposing, but you know, we have a proactive, positive agenda for the country. And that's something that I want to spend more time on in terms of convincing people the value of those ideas.
And also about how you're going to execute those ideas. How did it feel when the PAP managed to bore holes into those proposals?
Well, I always welcome robust debate and exchanges, so I don't take that negatively. I don't respond to that by saying that they don't have a right to do that, or that's not right, or that's nasty. No, I mean, I think we should have a robust debate. But what I also feel is that debate should not be personal. It should not be attacking the intentions of the other person. It should not be seeing your adversary or someone you disagree with as your enemy. You know, I think that's very important in the longer term to build a stronger and healthier political landscape in Singapore. We have to embrace disagreement, and we have to stop trying to demolish and wipe out the opponent by saying that, or by implying that so-and-so actually should not even be here, or should not, is ill-intentioned, or so on and so forth. You know, we should focus on the issues and the arguments at hand. This is what I feel.
But here's the thing. I mean, politics can get divisive, even dirty. Some might say we need to accept that it is about defending your policies and making your opponent appear less attractive to the electorate. Shouldn't you perhaps just learn to work under these circumstances, just as you have to learn to work within the constraints of the political system?
Well, I'm not sure I would agree with the characterization of politics as dirty. I think any kind of activity or any kind of arena can potentially degenerate into mudslinging and character assassination if all the stakeholders and participants want it to. But I think we can aspire to a better politics, a politics where we focus on issues and arguments and let people decide, rather than a politics where we try to tear each other down. Mm. And I appreciate the point that you've made. I know that in many systems that is not true, and both parties merely oppose one another for the sake of opposing. But that is not the philosophy of the Workers' Party. We do not oppose what the government does for the sake of opposing, and we also hope that they will not oppose what we say for the sake of opposing, but we should debate on the issues, debate what is best for the country, and move forward on that basis.
In the past, though, the Workers' Party has characterized the PAP as a bully. So if we went by what you're saying, couldn't that be construed as crossing the line as well?
It would be a better kind of debate and generate a better outcome for Singapore and Singaporeans if we debated on the merits of the issue rather than attacking one another's intentions.
But sometimes the other party's intentions and character is the issue. The Workers' Party too has attacked the PAP's intentions in the past. The point is, isn't this part and parcel of politics?
Not to question the integrity behind that, no. I mean, of course, we can talk about political intentions, but we do not attack people personally and characterize them as being bad people. And I actually said this in Parliament. You know, I think we should debate issues. We should play the ball rather than the man. And this is something I believe very, very strongly in. I think that would be much healthier for Singapore politics and political debate.
But inevitably, these things will come up, and to voters, integrity and character are very important in political leadership. Of course, the town council issue came up for your colleagues as well last year. I recall your saying in a speech also that the PAP is complacent, has never apologized for its mistakes, save for once when the Prime Minister said he was sorry in 2011. These are grey areas, questioning someone's political behaviour, intentions, attacking them personally. It's all intertwined, isn't it?
I wouldn't characterise that at all as a personal attack or questioning the integrity of the individuals on the other side. That is a comment on political behaviour. You know, and I think that is, of course, perfectly legitimate. But, you know, there is a certain way that we can debate these things without tearing each other down.
My point is that whatever the PAP has been saying about you could be construed as a comment on political behaviour too. For instance, the debate last week over the NCMP seats in Parliament and the WP's acceptance of these seats in spite of your in-principle opposition to the NCMP scheme, that sounded like a comment on your political behaviour.
It could be. And I think it's not my intention to really go too much into this issue because I don't have too much to add to what I have said in Parliament, because I did speak on the motion and I've also shared some of my thoughts on Facebook. So I don't want to elaborate too much on the specifics of this particular debate. But what I will say is that, you know, when as we debate this issue, it's helpful if we don't cast one another out to be duplicitous and deceptive people. That's, I think, not helpful. You can have debates about political behavior and policies and one stand on policies without that degenerating into saying that someone is a bad person. I think that we should try to make a distinction between the two. I admit that there is a whole spectrum from going from one end to the other end, but I think you can draw a line and try and keep things as far as possible on the right and healthy side of that spectrum.
We'll talk more about the NCMP issue in a while. But you mentioned in one of your rally speeches that you remember watching Mr. J.B. Jeyaratnam on TV debating the PAP in Parliament. You said one person debating a whole chamber of PAP MPs, how they mocked him and attacked him in debate. You were in Parliament last week. Tell me what was going through your mind as the WP came under fire last week over the NCMP issue. What was going through your mind, bearing in mind your memories of Mr. Jeyaratnam in Parliament?
Well, it was an intense and vigorous debate, and as I sat through that debate, I remember thinking that this is what I signed up for, essentially. I mean, I expected the debate to be vigorous, and that was not surprising. I expected some of the point scoring that I saw to be taking place. I expected, you know, some of the atmosphere that was clearly there, you know, in that debate. So I remember thinking, above all, that I have no regrets about the choices I've made. I'm glad to be there, and I want to just contribute as much as I can. So I think it was really that sort of a sentiment, the sentiment of not being very surprised.
Did you feel ganged up on?
Well, I think the reality is that we are vastly outnumbered, 83-8 in that particular debate, and the attendance on the People's Action Party side of the House was very high for that particular debate during those 2 hours as compared to, you know, the entire period of the last 5 days when the attendance was not so high. So the numerical asymmetry is there, but I think that I expected that, and I don't protest that because that is the reality, that is the result of the electoral system. So I would say no, I didn't feel ganged up on per se. Rather, I think my thinking about that is it is a reality that we have to work with, and we have to do our best within the framework of that reality. I think when you have political balance, you are more likely to get better bread and butter outcomes. About all the policy U-turns and reversals after 2011 really demonstrates that, and it goes to the heart of the issue, in my opinion, the heart of the issue. We had many policies, a slew of policies that took place after 2011, the progressive wage model, MediShield Life, de-linking HDB BTO prices from resale prices, and so on and so forth. I mean, I just mentioned three, but there were many. You know, more investment in our buses and trains is another important one.
Of course, the PAP said that many of these were in the works before 2011. So you maintain that the Workers' Party's presence in Parliament was the reason for the policy changes?
Not at all. Not at all. I maintain that it's how people voted that led to those policy changes. And this is really the point about political balance. It's different from just diversity. Political balance means that you have a loyal, constructive opposition that is able to win some electoral seats. And because of that, a ruling party that is very strongly entrenched will need to ensure that its policies do not stray too far from the country's political center of gravity, from what most people want. So in order to achieve that, you need to have an opposition that is viable, that is able to win some electoral contests. If you have an opposition that is completely not viable, then that does not bring that kind of political balance. They may be there just to debate and express views, but that is a different thing from political balance. And it's political balance that I think is what is so vitally necessary for us now. I think the credit for that goes to the Singaporean voters.
What did the WP have to do with that?
Well, what the WP had to do with that was that we created an alternative that was able to resonate with voters, to give them the choice so that they were able to send that signal.
But some analysts say that it was a protest vote and that it may not have been indicative of whether or not the people believe you could be a viable alternative.
Well, I think to characterize it as a protest vote assumes too much. I think you would have to study the motivation of the people who voted. I don't have that empirical data, so I wouldn't characterize it as a protest vote. I think it was what it was. But I think the value to Singapore, and this is the key point, is that through that greater balance, there were better outcomes for policies and better outcomes for Singapore. And that's why balance is so vital.
Your party has lost ground, though. There were trust and competence issues brought up over the town council issue as well. How viable would you say your party is today?
Well, the process of building a constructive and viable opposition party is not something that's going to be finished in one term or two terms. It's a long-term process. It's a long journey that we have to walk. Most Singaporeans, I believe, want to see evolutionary change in our political system, and that change should be in the direction of moving towards a better politics for a better society. So I think we are certainly along that road. That road has to be a road of continual improvement and betterment. That is what we have to do in the Workers' Party. That's what all organizations should be doing. So I think we are on that road, but it's going to be a long road moving forward.
The fact that you said you do not seek to govern, do you think that actually worked against you?
We do not seek to govern now because we understand that as an institution, we need to grow and develop. And the public support for that institution has to grow in tandem in a stepwise manner, in an evolutionary manner, not in a sudden manner where one day we don't seek to govern and the very next day we say that, yes, today we're going to govern. There are many people out there, I think, who would like us to do that, but I don't think that's good for Singapore, and I don't think that's what most Singaporeans want. We are going to take an evolutionary approach to grow the party as an institution and grow public support in tandem with that towards a point in time in the future when we would be in a position to seek to govern. And when that point in time comes, I think it's up to the Singaporean people to incrementally support us if they feel that we are a good party, if they feel that we are making a positive contribution.
The issue of the unlevel playing field, it's been brought up by not just opposition parties, but independent analysts as well. Certainly, it wouldn't be in the interest of the PAP to make it much easier for any opposition to gain ground. It's the nature of politics, is it not? It is just not in the interest of any ruling party in any country to do that. Would you agree?
No, I would not agree with that, because I think that when we talk about this issue, I would contrast it with how we talk about other issues. When we talk about other issues and we say that Singapore is here and other countries are there, we never say that, well, what is normal for other countries is good enough for Singapore, or because other countries all do things in a particular way, therefore we should just accept it and we should not try to be better than that. We don't have that kind of conversation in any other policy area. But when it comes to structuring the political system, making the playing field more level, I find the conversation takes that turn and people keep saying, well, you know, you can't expect an entrenched ruling party to be generous or to want to change, you know, all the advantages that they have under the current system. Of course, every ruling party would want to have as many advantages as they can. And this is the kind of conversation that we have. I think one commentator put it very memorably. Can't recall who it was, but the comment was that it is not in the nature of power to give itself away. So I take issue with that. I think as a country, you know, we have to say that we don't have to accept the norm in other countries. We can do better. I mean, we don't accept this in any other area of policy. In economic policy, we don't say that other countries are not building infrastructure ahead of demand, so therefore we should not build economic infrastructure ahead of demand. We never have that kind of a conversation. So the same should apply in politics. We should make a distinction between what is good for the People's Action Party and what is good for Singapore. Is a level playing field in politics good for Singapore? I think it is.
But do you really expect the PAP to say, OK, I'm going to make it easier for you to come into Parliament, beyond, of course, the NCMP scheme, and make it easier for you to beat me? Also, it looks like the electorate may need a little more convincing that a level playing field is what's good for Singapore, just based on the last election results.
I think what we hope to do is we hope to convince people that a level playing field is in the best interest of Singapore, and we hope that through convincing more people that will be more public support that the People's Action Party cannot ignore to level the playing field further.
Earlier you said that you recognise the need to work harder to convince people. Can you be more specific about something that we can expect from the WP going forward? What need can the WP fulfil that will make it a viable choice in an election?
For us, our goal is to build a viable and constructive opposition that helps to bring balance.
But in order to be able to do that, you have to offer something concrete. We also know that Singaporeans may not choose opposition for opposition's sake. So is there anything specific that you can offer to a voter that would convince them there is a point in voting for the WP?
The quality of ideas that we bring up has to be good and seem to be, you know, constructive and for the good of Singapore. So our manifesto, as we talked about, and there's over 130 policy recommendations.
Give me one or two ideas.
So let me just pick two examples here from our manifesto. So the first one I actually did mention in my maiden speech in Parliament, and I've mentioned it actually since the last election as well, which is to create a national secretariat for SMEs. That is important because it's vitally important for the country to build a very strong SME sector with a core of globally competitive countries that can be an engine for growth for the country to stand alongside the SMEs and the GLCs, which we're overly dependent on, you know, for value creation. And a national secretariat would actually bring a whole of government approach to this. It would bring an interministerial, interdepartmental approach and really push it forward as a key national priority rather than just being seen to be only a priority for MTI, the Ministry of Trade and Industry. So that's one thing. That's something I do care about and something I hope to speak more about together with some of the other policy ideas we have for developing a strong SME sector. The second example I would pick is somewhat more of a quirky one, perhaps you could say, but I think it's an interesting one. So I chose that just to illustrate the breadth of ideas that we've tried to put forward, and that is the Teach for Singapore scheme. So we proposed that there should be a program to hire teachers who have a passion for making a difference to underprivileged or at-risk children, you know, teachers who are very able and who are really passionate about making a difference, and we should induct them into a scheme where they are trained not just in teaching skills, but they are also trained in some social work and counselling skills, and they are then sent into teaching environments where they work with at-risk children in order to really make a difference to their lives and really help our social mobility. That's something that I really like.
How do you plan to grow public support, considering the unlevel playing field?
I think in spite of the challenges, in spite of the unlevel playing field, we have to deal with the political reality as it is, and we have to work within that framework, within that system, and we have to keep striving to make gains.
You're an NCMP, so we have to talk about the issue and the WP stance on the NCMP seats.
Well, I don't want to go into too much detail because I think there was a very extensive debate in Parliament and so on, but if I were to encapsulate it, I would say one thing first and foremost, and this was actually said by my colleague, Mr. Yee. I think when we talk about the changes to the NCMP system, we have to be clear that these changes are not necessarily earth-shattering. You know, we are increasing the number from 9 to 12. And previously, NCMPs could vote on quite a number of things. The change that is being made is that they can now vote on more things. But it was not the case that previously they could not vote on anything at all. You know, the NCMPs were able to vote. So I would firstly create that context, you know, that the changes are not as earth-shattering as it is being made out to be in some quarters. But I think our view is that we have to work within this system, we have to engage with this system. We cannot choose the political system we want to contest in and engage in, you know.
But the contradiction keeps coming up. I mean, Mr. Lau Tia Kiang's duckweed analogy and the fact that it might actually work against you when it comes to an election. But your party members taking up the seats anyway. You took up the seat anyway. So the contradiction keeps being pointed out.
It's not a contradiction at all. I totally disagree. We have to work within this system. And while certainly if anyone accepts an NCMP seat, there is a long-term risk that this will weaken the cause and the case for a balanced politics, but we have to weigh that against what positive contribution we can make in Parliament. And that calculus and that weighing may be different in different cases, you know, whether it's an elected MP losing their seat or someone who's never been an elected MP coming in. And we've talked about that. I think the key point, Bharati, the absolutely vital and key point here is that as the system gets tweaked and changed, and these changes are not under our control, these changes are done by the ruling party, we do not want to do what the Barisan Socialists did in the 1960s, which is disengage from the system because we feel that we disagree with it, therefore we are not going to play by these rules. We want to remain within the system and do whatever we can within that system.
No one is suggesting that by not taking the seats, you'd be disengaging completely or that you have to. There are other avenues through which you can remain engaged. I mean, your party has elected MPs in Parliament. Even if you chose to reject the NCMP seats on principle, you have the right to stand for elections and go into Parliament as elected MPs. Some may say in that connection that the Barisan Socialists at least appeared to stand by its principles. In your case, by accepting the NCMP seats in spite of your objections to the scheme, it looks as if you'll take whatever you can get, putting your principles aside. It might smack of desperation even.
I completely disagree that our stance on the NCMP scheme shows that we have no principles. I do not think that that is the case at all. I think that we have made it very clear that while we disagree in principle with the scheme, we have to consider the scheme as part of the political reality and see to how we work with that reality to advance the balanced politics. It is not a contradiction at all. And I think the point you made about the Barisan Socialists at least being extremely principled, well, my question, Bharati, is where did that get Singapore? By some, it may be cast by some as being an extremely principled thing. But I think it's set the course of balanced politics back.
But you are free to work the ground and contest in elections, even if you don't accept NCMP seats.
We have to stay engaged within that system and try to make whatever gains we can for the cause of a balanced politics. So we want to stay engaged as best we can.
Now there's a proposal to give NCMPs equal powers, equal voting rights as MPs. Some analysts are questioning how democratic this move is. I mean, to have in Parliament NCMPs who weren't elected by the majority in their constituents, who under the proposal will have equal rights as MPs. As a matter of principle, as a person who obviously supports democratic politics, do you have a separate opinion on the issue of voting rights being equal?
We have said that we oppose the scheme in principle, so I won't comment on whether the tweaks to the scheme are better or worse. Ultimately, those tweaks and changes are not under our control. They are decided by the ruling party. So I think what is the key point is that we have to take those changes and see how we can work within that system in order to make a contribution going forward.
If it were up to you to make changes to the political system, what would you propose?
Having fixed-term parliaments, having an independent electoral commission that is not under the control of the government, having an independent electoral boundary review committee, creating the office of an ombudsman, and so on and so forth. I think the key here is that the changes that we have suggested would be changes that tend to level the playing field and make elections more contestable. And we should be looking at that as one of the key outcomes of political changes that we make, whether the playing field is level and whether the contestability is there so that there are good outcomes for Singapore.
What do you think of the move to have smaller GRCs and more SMCs? Wouldn't that help the opposition?
Devil is in the details, so we will have to see exactly how small is small and how many SMCs are being created and so on. And then we may comment on that when the specifics of that are made clearer.
The Workers' Party's Leon Pereira, NCMP, on the record with me today. Thanks for staying with us.